we look at him and he says, "You're who?" I said, "I'm Dr. John von Neumann." And I said, "You can't be. We just left him an hour or so ago, and he's a much younger man." And he looked at us a little sternly. He says, "Gentlemen, I am the same man that you knew in 1943. This is not 1943. It's 1983, and you're at Montauk, Long Island, in our underground installation."
And he knows that you two were missing in action back in 43.
Right. Welcome, or something like that.
Yep.
Well, we went along with it and said, "Well, this guy must be a little bit daft." But we followed him around as he gave us the tour. And, of course, we saw all kinds of weird electronic equipment, weird to us, modern-day computers. At that time, IBM 360s and 370s was the most modern, other than the Cray 1, which we didn't see.
They took up rooms at the time, didn't they?
And we were shown all of the equipment. We were shown large-screen visual displays, et cetera, and a lot of equipment we didn't recognize at all. And finally, he says to us, "Gentlemen, I got something else here I have to do in my office here. Sit down in this lounge chair and watch TV. Well, I'll come back and get you."
TV, you say?
So we did. It was large-screen color TV. That was the next shock, because in 1943, there's no such thing as color TV, and all we had these little black and white 10-inch sets. The typical chassis at that time is the RCA 630TS. A very famous chassis, I might add, but no black and white, all full color, large screen. So we're watching this for a period of time, and we're seeing discussions about the man in the moon and what was going on in space and the Cold War and shots of cities with huge freeways and traffic jams and all of this.
Were they showing you a videotape, or are you watching some kind of program?
No, we were watching live TV.
Okay.
And some other programming, which we didn't pay that much attention to. But what finally got to us were the commercials. God bless the commercials, because they really hit us. Among the commercials we watched was one for what I believe now is American Airlines. It doesn't matter if it was American or someone else. And they were saying, quote, "On your next vacation trip to Hawaii, why not fly with us in our 747 jets?" And then, of course, they show a shot of a 747 jet in flight. We look at this thing, and our mouths practically drop to the floor. And says, "What the blazes is this?"
Where are we?
Yeah, we use somewhat different language. But maybe the old man is right. Let's go find him. So we found his office, and he says, "Well," we say to him, "Well, maybe you're right. What is going on?" He says, "Gentlemen, we have a problem." "Okay, what's the problem?" He says, "You jumped overboard from the Eldridge. You came here. We don't even fully know how you got here. But you've got to go back to the Eldridge and shut off the equipment." Said, "It is sitting in hyperspace. It has created a hyperspace bubble around itself. It is growing. And there's enough fuel on board the ship if the equipment doesn't break down for it to run almost 30 days. And it couldn't create a hyperspace bubble large enough to engulf the Earth."
Oh, my God.
"You've got to go back there and shut the equipment off." So we look at him and says, "Great. We don't know how we got here. Now, how are we supposed to get back
How
there?
Are we going to get back?"
And he says, "No problem, gentlemen. We here at Montauk have complete control over space and time. We can send you anywhere we want at any time we want." So they did. They sent us to the what became known as the Montauk Tunnel. We jumped or we were pushed into it. We wound up on the decks of the Eldridge with instructions to smash the equipment. The ship will return to its starting point after the equipment is sufficiently disabled.
Were you fully aware, memory-wise, of that visit into the future when you went back?
Yes, we were.
Okay.
And so we went on board. We were in what were the equivalent of, not space suits, but radiation suits, completely shielded. And we found access and started smashing equipment in every direction. The instructions, one piece of equipment only, you do not destroy. It was a very specialized piece of equipment, which was not where we were working over the equipment anyway.
Now, were there other sailors from 43 still on the ship when you were doing this?
Yes.
Okay, so they must have been watching you going, what are they doing?
No, they weren't watching us because we were back in the control room, and we didn't pay any attention as to what happened when we arrived. We just went to the control room and started smashing equipment.
Starting doing what they
had. And we heard the generators winding down.
Okay.
At that point, we knew it was essentially over, and it would take a few minutes before the fields collapsed. So we went out on deck at that point, and that's when we saw sailors milling around very crazily and totally disoriented. And we found the two guys buried in the steel deck and the two guys upright in the bulkhead, including a brother Jim.
What a sight that must have been, to see somebody buried into steel. to be buried in the steel, Al, must have just looked so strange.
It was very strange. We didn't understand it. It was a long time afterwards before we understood what really happened. But at that point, we saw this. We couldn't really fully accept it. We couldn't understand it. Duncan got very upset. He headed back towards the railing and looked at me like, aren't I going with him? I stayed behind because Brother Jim was still semi-coherent and crying, and I went over to try and comfort him. He did eventually die. But at that point, Duncan jumped overboard and disappeared. The fields had not yet collapsed. Shortly after he jumped overboard, the fields collapsed, and we, of course, could then see the outline of the bay and the other ships and where we had been originally.
So Duncan jumps.
Yes.
And he's gone now.
He's gone.
All right.
So I'm there. Excuse me. The other sailors were milling around. Others below deck, as I found out later, were okay. They hadn't been affected. And, of course, comes the boarding party. And they see me there, ask me a few questions, and then they realize that the captain could not be located.
Mm-hmm.
They bring on a second boarding party to take the ship back to the Navy Yard, back to Philadelphia in the yard. At that point, they decide on about 4 days, literally, of, shall we say, a board of inquiry was brought on board there, and 4 days of inquiry, what happened, what went wrong.
And you've got to tell them you jumped into the future.
Yes, I told them that. They didn't believe it.